This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Sri Lanka, a large and beautiful island off the coast of India, Indo-Pacific Ocean. We're looking at a crisis. Bloomberg's headline, Sri Lanka stumbles towards its first default on foreign debt. That concentrates on the disruption of these last days, but there's more. The Financial Times, Europe watching, the president should resign. Sri Lanka's Rajapaksa clings to power as crisis mounts. This is a story of one family that dominates the region, Rajapaksa, and the attempts to ameliorate the crisis, the challenge, which looks right now to be demonstrations in the streets. I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who's my guide in the Indian Ocean Basin right now, because this disturbs the whole region, not just the large island of Colombo that emerged from disruptions over many years. And to my understanding, was organizing itself in a prosperous fashion, except China. Cleo, a very good day to you. Sri Lanka, when we last talked, was ripped by protests. What is the protest about, and what is the now president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, doing about it? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So first off, just to reinforce what you said at the beginning, because it's incredibly important, which is this is a big sort of fundamental island at a very strategic crossroads. So Sri Lanka is not peripheral to geopolitics. If the Chinese port there gets fully implemented and becomes dual use, they have a toehold in a location that can constrain traffic throughout the Indo-Pacific, especially from the Pacific Basin to the Indian Ocean Basin. So it has been a high priority target for China for a very long time. And the initial way that China goes into a country, as we know, is economic, and they managed to get it substantially indebted with the cooperation of some corrupt local politicians. And then the pandemic hit and destroyed the Sri Lankan tourism sector. And now we have problems with exports of tea. They're having a hard time buying fertilizer. So the global economic instability came on to an already weakened economy, weakened in part deliberately through big Chinese debts, and created a situation where I think Beijing thought that they could walk in and grab all the pieces of strategic infrastructure that they wanted. The interesting and heartening element of this is that India has said, I don't think so. And we're going to see whether we can bail out Sri Lanka. They've given about $4 billion towards this in various forms, loans as well, to try to stabilize the economy. And so this is just as we saw in the Solomons, just as happened in the Maldives, this is kind of a front line of the political warfare battle that precedes anything kinetic. And it seems like the president, so the president has a large family. There are a lot of them were in government. Most of them have now resigned. The remaining Rajapaksa family members, the president, President Gotabaya, and he seems to be of the family, the most kind of willing to work with India to try to stabilize the economy. And he's appointed a new prime minister, Wick Ramasinghe, I think this is the fifth time he's prime minister. He's been in parliament for over four decades. He's highly experienced. The fact that he would take the job means that he and those in opposition who he represents are willing to stabilize the country as it now stands. So this appointment of the new prime minister is a good sign. The fact that some of the more problematic Rajapaksa brothers are out of government is a good sign. But we're not at the end of the road yet.
Yes, we have reporting. This is Financial Times reporting. What we have here is not only China, but the IMF involved. And the default is the pressing matter. There's a grace period. So Sri Lanka, I'm coming to this fresh. Has the economy there ever been stable? Is it the pandemic that pushed it over, or was it always a brittle environment?
It was, you know, a developing economy, you know, post-British colonial developing economy, kind of, you know, it had a civil war, which, or uprising, however you want to put it, which impeded its development for a little while, but it has enormous potential and skilled business class, and it has a lot to offer. So it's, you know, it can be, if external forces don't destabilize it, for their own strategic advantage, it has the potential to stand on its own feet. And in fact, there are kind of two pathways now. There's the pathway that leads towards Chinese vassaldom, which is what Beijing has been working towards. And there's another pathway where it comes in, at least strategically, closer to India and can, in fact, become sort of a quad plus country. Like, it had, there's a whole other pathway which is viable. I don't know how possible it is, but it's viable, where it becomes a bulwark against China. And again, like the Solomon Islands, this comes down to leadership. And there's, and in terms of the loans, I mean, this is like, you know, Sadat saying, "I'm not going to pay back the Soviets." You know, if you're in geopolitics and economics are so linked in this situation that there's a justification for walking away from the Chinese loans if they don't think they're going to get sanctioned by everybody else.
The Rajapaksa family is very large and dominant, according to the Financial Times, for two decades. So they've been there during the period of developing the dual-use port for China. Do they have a close relationship, working relationship with Beijing? What do they think of Beijing's conduct in throughout the region, where you can point to many instances, you've named several of them, of China using the renminbi to take over a culture?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, as with many families, the brothers and uncles, and they're almost all the men that are involved, don't necessarily agree with each other on some of these issues. So, from what I understand, and I get new information all the time, the continuum is sort of that Basil was very pro-China. Mahendra was kind of in the middle. But potentially, see, because the thing is, we think of it in this kind of U.S.-China dichotomy. But actually, for Sri Lanka, it can be more of a China-India dichotomy. And that's much less threatening than U.S. So some of the family was definitely very pro-PRC. And some of it is much more willing to work with India. And by extension, if the West doesn't completely alienate India, that means the West as well. So that's why this president, Gotabaya, the brother who's currently president, is a good sign for the West via his relationship potentially with India.
The Quad, just here, because the Financial Times is not mentioning the Quad. It is a large alliance, economic alliance, chiefly, I'm understanding, India, Australia, the U.S., and Japan. Is the Quad engaged in any fashion in these negotiations? Do they stand to come in and help?
They're not, and it's largely, the Quad is quite amorphous at the moment. But there's going to be an in-person Quad meeting in Japan, I think May 24th, 5th, or 6th, I can't remember, but President Biden is actually going to be in Japan for that Quad meeting. This is an important meeting. It's as mentioned, in person, and it'll be a few days after the Australian election. And remember, Australia is a member of the Quad, and the rumors are that Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, will be visiting the Solomon Islands within days of that meeting. So that those few days are going to be very important for the direction of at least the Pacific part of the Indo-Pacific, and what's happening in Sri Lanka is very important for the Indian Ocean part of the Indo-Pacific.
Final concern, there's been violence, there's been confrontation in the street, there's been deployment of police and military. Is that abating, or is that risk of coming back?
It looks like the opposition is coming together behind the new prime minister and the new economic plan. And so there will be, some of the demonstrations are definitely organic and truly felt. Some of them may be instigated by outside players, including the PRC. Right. But I think that now we've bought ourselves a little bit of time.
Cleo Pascal for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, reporting on Sri Lanka. I'm John Bashir.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.